You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Full transparency. Prior to us kicking off this hour, I said, Ty, you're a Yankees fan. I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but I'm curious, as a Yankees fan, how excited were you that it ended in the sixth inning, considering that the bullpen has been no bueno, and how confident are you, or not confident, that the Yankees would have won if it would have gone the distance, if it would have gone nine innings, and they would have had to go to the bullpen, assuming that they would have. Gerrit Cole, six innings, gave up five hits, one run, 11 strikeouts. It's his 10th victory. It's his seventh double-digit strikeout game this season. So he picked up where he left off against the Astros. There's no denying that. DJ Sanchez Torres putting up some ribbies, home runs, back-to-back. Yay! Everybody's happy. But how much, I guess, 800-919-3776, how much weight are you putting into this game last night? Again, considering that it only went six innings and they did not have to go to the bullpen. God bless. So, and I don't want to be sitting here and be a negative Nelly, but yesterday we talked about the Yankees a lot, fielded a ton of calls. Last week we did the same thing. Everybody calling in, this Yankees team just stinks. Wave the white flag. Cashman needs to go. Boone needs to go. Everybody needs to go. And how significant we've been talking about how the next few weeks are based on their opponents, trying to gain some leg, trying to gain some ground. Do you think they're going to catch Boston? No, they're nine games back. I know it's still second half of the season. There's still a lot of baseball to be played. I don't anticipate them to catch up to Boston. But the hope here, and had Brian Hoke on the show, had listened to Buster Olney as well, who was on the Michael Kay Show, had David Lennon on with us from on the Daily News yesterday. And everything that we're hearing is that the Yankees are still going to be aggressive. They're still going to be buyers. Trade deadline, they're going to try to improve this roster. Where do you stand after last night's performance? I'm still waving the white flag. I'm still feeling, let's move forward and do what we can. Let's try to trade Stanton. Let's see if somebody wants Luke Voit once he comes off the IL. Let's rid that part of our roster so we can really start creating a better roster, a better lineup when we're not handcuffed by Stanton, being subject to the DH because he gets injured when he plays the outfield, and start looking forward to 2022. Now, Cole's had two really phenomenal performances. Can't take that away from him. Expecting Severino and Kluber to come back, right? Still no timetable, but, is there some optimism? There absolutely is. And coming off of this game where now they're tied with Boston in this series, rubber match later on tonight at 7 o'clock. It's the premier game on ESPN. I guess my question right now, I want to open up the show, 800-919-3776 is, how much did this game last night move the needle for you? Did it change the way that you feel? Did it give you any type of hope or optimism? Because for me, it did not. And I hate to be a negative Nelly. If you know anything about me, I always like glass half full, silver lining. I always try to look for it. But considering that the bullpen didn't have to step up, how do you feel this morning after a game against the Red Sox that the Yankees did not have to go into their bullpen?
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, every day is so important right now for us as a team. And certainly tonight was the case. Obviously Garrett was terrific. We came through with some big hits. DJ with a huge at bat there to tie the game, and then a couple of home runs was good to see. Did some really good things defensively. So to finally push through against those guys is certainly nice. Now we got a big one tomorrow.
Sure do. Rubber match. Should have been four, but of course we know the story. It was one of the biggest stories towards the end of the week in regard to five Yankee players now having to deal with COVID, not available for 10 days. But the Yankees did win last night, again, 3-1 in six innings. Gerrit Cole, six innings, five hits, one run, 11 strikeouts. Again, his 10th victory of the season, and his seventh time with double-digit strikeouts in a game. So DJ got involved. Sanchez, Torres, of course, hot with the bats, getting those ribbies in, which, of course, they needed to win 3-1. But again, my show question right now, this hour, is, you know, did last night's game change anything for you? Based that now that we've seen Gerrit Cole come out, put on a clinic his last two starts, and we've heard from David Lennon, we've heard from Buster Olney, we've heard from Brian Hoke, that what they're hearing is that the Yankees aren't going to be waving the white flag. They are going to be aggressive in trying to improve this roster, whether it's the rotation, really, let's be honest, it should be the lineup as we get closer to the end of July. 800-919-3776. Let's take your calls. Let's go to Keith in Brooklyn. Keith, you're up.
Hi, Anita. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
So, good morning. So, I'm a huge Yankee fan, and you know, after Gerrit Cole, it's pretty much a crapshoot. Like I was telling Ty, it's like a bad relationship. You have your good days, you have your bad days, and you have to make a decision to move on. And I think they need to move on from Boone and Cashman. And if they're going to make a push this season, I think they have to make a push for Joey Votto. We need a left-handed bat in the lineup, you know, to balance out all these right-handers. So that's what I feel, and hopefully we can make it through this year and make it better next year.
I mean, Keith, thank you for the phone call. A lot of people feel the same way you do. That's for sure. Again, you know, I feel the Yankees need to I'm not saying trade. I like the makeup of this team. I don't think the Yankees are that far away looking towards 2022, but I do believe that they should. Cashman should open up the phone line and say, listen, I'll listen to some offers for Stanton. And like I said, I threw out Luke Voit. I think, you know, there's possibly some teams out there, Major League Baseball, once Luke gets healthy. I know it's impossible for him to stay healthy for consistency, but maybe just for a few weeks, maybe for the second half of the Major League Baseball season, a team that just needs a power hitter to come in and help them get over that hump and possibly make a run to make it to the postseason, let alone win a World Series. Ty, I know that you're a big Yankees fan. So first and foremost, curious to get your thoughts on last night's game. At what point in time did it run through your brain, oh, wow, thank God we didn't have to go into the bullpen?
Well, I'll be honest. I was flipping back and forth between this game and game five of the finals, mm-hmm. that thriller. So once the Yankees go into a rain delay, I go to Buck Sons, and I'm on Twitter, and I see the game has officially been called. The Yankees win this one. I'm like, oh, thank God. Because could you imagine now after a delay – who knows if Cole's available, you go to that bullpen that has failed you, you know, so many times in recent memory. This could be another heartbreaking loss for the Yankees. Now, I'm not sure it's going to do anything. Like, yeah, it feels good to beat the Red Sox for the first time in eight tries this season. You're now 1-7 against them. Hooray. But you know, it's a victory nonetheless. You take it where you can, and you just hope they can go out there tonight and complete the series win after dropping that first game on Friday night.
Just out of curiosity, you know, because, you know, prior to Gerrit Cole's performance against the Astros and then again last night, you know, there's been some talk and speculation ever since Major League Baseball has been trying to crack down on the sticky stuff. You know, his ERA went up significantly, but the last two performances have been quite good. Surprising to you what we've seen from Gerrit Cole the last two performances, and how much are you banking and riding on this vintage Gerrit Cole remaining what we're going to see for the remainder of the season, or at least the majority of the remainder of the season?
Well, I'm not shocked, because it's not like Gerrit Cole's a scrub. This isn't someone who was a bum, then used the sticky stuff and became a Hall of Famer. Like, that's not the story. Yeah, did it help him? Obviously it did. You look at the numbers, it's a stark contrast. It would be hard to argue that he didn't benefit from it. Then you listen to the awkward press conference he had with mm-hmm. that exchange. It's obvious, you know, he was using that substance. But shocking that, you know, he would go out there and still be great? No. You still anticipate this being one of the best pitchers in baseball. You spent a lot of money on him, so you hope that over the course of the next, 7 years or so, he can still be formidable. But not surprised. I don't expect him to be the Gerrit Cole that we saw in Houston. That would be, quote-unquote, unfair to ask. But he's still a great pitcher.
There's no denying that. But listen, there's Yu Darvish, there's the Chapman. There's a lot of really great pitchers in Major League Baseball that have taken a step back since Major League Baseball has decided to kind of crack down on this stuff. And Gerrit Cole was one of them. And so I won't use the word shocked, but surprised and thrilled with the performance that we saw him pitch against the Astros. And then I was really curious, you know, was that just, you know, pitching with a little bit more motivation because he's going up against his former team? And, you know, regardless, athletes, whatever sport they're in, you know, they go up against their former team. They want to make sure they come at 110%. And this is the Red Sox. I get it. In the division, really important. Try to make up ground. You know, now they're 8 games back as opposed to 9. Extra motivation here as well. You know, but you get this type of performance from him two starts in a row. Okay. All right, you know, now I'm back on the Gerrit Cole train, I guess. Well, see what I did there? That's kind of funny. Is what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Not sure it's going to mean anything in the long run. Unfortunately, the hole is too deep for this team to recover from, especially when you consider not only do you got to jump teams in your division, but you look at the wild card race and you got the A's and teams like that that so far have been better than you. Like there's no reason to suggest that the Yankees can overcome Cleveland, Toronto, Seattle, Oakland while trying to get healthy and correct, you know, the bullpen issues and the offensive issues. It's just going to be too much to overcome. I think they're done. I'm with you. I think we can look ahead to next season. I don't know that they're going to do anything at the trade deadline. From a pride standpoint, I can't see this team going from favorites to get to the World Series to being sellers. And I know it would be the right business move, but I think that you can always convince yourself that you're still one 2 week hot stretch away, especially once you get your guys back. I just don't see it happening.
You know, it's interesting you say, and again, you're a Yankees fan, and you mentioned the word pride. Because I think that's where a lot of this is coming from, especially within the organization. I mean, it's been a while, and it doesn't happen quite, you know, very frequently that the Yankees, you know, it kind of, you know, and I grew up in Miami. My dad played for the University of Miami. I was born, my dad was in architectural school, so my parents lived in married housing at the university. So I grew up a huge Canes fan. Okay, and follow me here. I know kind of long. I will make the connection. So growing up as a kid, we were more Canes fans than we were Dolphin fans, until of course Dan Marino came along. But you know, every season it was national championship or bust. You know, there was no, you know, Canes were always in it to make a run and to get into the national championship each and every year. Coming into the season, they were always ranked in the top 5, top 3, majority of time, best team in college football. And so I grew up in that era, you know, Cozar, Testaverde, Shockey, Irvin, like Ray Lewis. Like I grew up watching those teams, and so each and every year was the expectation for us. And when they fell short, we didn't understand, like, what happened. How could this happen? What do you mean? Why do you? We're supposed to. We're entitled, right? Like this was the viewpoint I had as a, you know, 12, 13 year old girl who was a huge Canes fan. You know, entitled, like this is what I came to expect. So when you have that type of history, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to digest and say, oh, this isn't our year, because you're not used to that as a Yankees fan. You're just not used to it. You're always it's September, November, it's October. It's always, you know, it's always important. You're always relevant. And so I think it's a hard pill to swallow for fans. And also I think it's a hard pill to swallow for an organization, and an organization whose brand is that. And so even though, as I like to say, not like to say, but it's a phrase I do say, cutting off your nose to spite your face, I do believe that if the Yankees are aggressive in going out and trying to better this team, to try to make a run for it, I think they're cutting off their nose to spite their face because they want to continue with the brand as opposed to doing what is best for the team moving forward and looking ahead to 2022. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
Am I making sense? Okay. Okay.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Ty, again, producing the show. Him and I had a little personal wager. So a few of my bets from last night. I love the Bucks. I had the Bucks on the money line. I also had the Bucks +4, and you could have gotten that at -110. Some prop bets that I liked out there. I liked Chris Paul under 29.5 points and assists because I did think Drew Holiday has just been playing amazing defense. And let's be honest, the steal late in the game against Booker, to me, really is what, like, sold it, right? Was really the nail in the coffin for the Suns to lose. That steal was everything. Very similar to the block that Giannis had in game 4. And Holiday, man, Giannis is playing 41 minutes, played 41 minutes. He's averaging 40 minutes a game. Chris Middleton, 44 minutes. Holiday played 47 minutes, and all of them. I mean, look at the numbers here. Giannis, 32 points. Middleton, 29 points. Holiday, 27 points. Holiday had a double-double. He also had 13 assists, so which was really surprising to me. I had the under. The under was 218, 219. I think you and I split the difference at 219, so I lost there. So I won with the Bucks. Lost with the under, you had the over, and I lost with Chris Paul, you won. So I owe you, I don't know, what do you want? Like a order of Pampers? What do you want, Ty? What do you win?
I'd have to think about that. I got to consider. I know we mentioned on the air a bottle of wine. Maybe we can go on
I know. I mean, you're a new papa now, so I would imagine. I don't know.
We got a ton of Pampers right now. I will say that. Okay. We are, you know, overcome by Pampers.
Let me hear. Let's.
I'm going to be wearing Pampers.
Oh, please post that on Instagram. Do me a favor. Go to Amazon. Pick out a nice gift. Something great for your son, and send me the link. Okay.
He did say he wants a new car. Like a Mazda, like a 2022.
Yeah,
Mazda 6, nice little sedan, all red.
Something reasonable within the price range of a bottle of wine, please. But Chris Paul had a good game himself. 35 minutes, 21 points, 11 assists. So he pulled a double-double as well. He had 2 rebounds. So I did not see a lot of Holiday on him as much as we saw in game 4. And that's why... Not only a big reason why I liked the under yesterday was because of Holiday's defense on Chris Paul, and I thought that he was going to shadow him again in game 5. That wasn't the case. But also, look at these numbers with Holiday, right? Like we said, playing great defense, but he's 43% shooting at home, 37% on the road, and from downtown, 3-point range, 30% at home, 28% on the road. In Middleton, he is 46% at home and only 40% on the road, and only shooting 31% from downtown, from behind the arc, from Middleton as well. So Holiday's defense, as well as the fact that both Holiday and Middleton typically in the previous series in Phoenix, 10% shooting percentage less out there in the desert than at home with the Bucks. So that's why I had the under. Sure enough, that wasn't the case at 123 to 119. What a great game this was. And it really came down to the wire and some phenomenal defensive plays and specifically the steal from Devin Booker or from Holiday on Devin Booker. I feel kind of sealed the deal. And you go back and you look at game 4 and Giannis's block on Ayton. Those two key plays, I know we sit here and we talk offensively, the amount of points that these guys are putting up. Again, Giannis 32, Middleton 29, Holiday 27, and then, you've got Pat, I never pronounce his name properly, Connaughton, right? There you go, Connaughton. He had that was my best bet yesterday, if you recall. Over 1.5 three-pointers. He was 4 of 6 from downtown. He put up 14 points, played 33 minutes. So, but don't you feel, Ty, I mean, really, when you look at this series, you know, there's a few clutch plays that really stand out. And where we are right now, and the fact that the Bucks have won the last three, the last two games, those two defensive plays, to me, have been the significance.
Yeah, and from the Bucks' standpoint, the defensive plays, you could say, in their franchise's history, two of the biggest plays they've ever had. But for the Suns, I mean, how do you if you're a Suns fan, if you're a player, if you're a coach, how do you recover from that? To be up in game 4-5 with 5.5 minutes left, those leads get blown all the time. But the CP3 turnovers were killers. And then in game 5 last night, Booker's got it. They were down 10 with like 3 minutes left to go. They get all the way back in it, down 1. Booker's got a chance to give them the lead, and then he turns it over. And not only does he turn it over, what gets lost is Chris Paul. What a foolish foul that was on the alley hoop to Giannis. Giannis misses the free throw, but then they get the offensive rebound. Middleton goes 1 of 2 from the line. The game's over. At least if you allow Giannis to just get the dunk, it's still a one-possession game. So it's a boneheaded move on the part of CP3. Very unfortunate for Booker. Can't kill him that much. He got caught. It was a great defensive play by Tucker. And then, you know, Jrue Holiday comes over as the help defender and steals it. But that's just, it's so deflating because you were up 2-0 in this series, had a chance to win game 4, chance to win game 5, and now your season's on the line on Tuesday night in Milwaukee, a place where, you know, it's hard to beat the Bucks. So it's heartbreaking.
And even more so, in my opinion, more so deflating, the fact that it happened at home. It was on your home court.
And see, that's the biggest thing. Coming into that game last night, I thought, all right, so it's a 2-2 series. I think all the pressure is on the Suns because, like, what is your path to winning this series that does not include you winning game 5 on your home floor? How do you go down 3-2, then have to go back to Milwaukee to win a game 6 and then come back home to win a game 7 where you just lost? It's tough to recover from losing 3 straight and then the third being on your home floor and then having to go to Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, talk about deflating. Absolutely deflating. Here's another one for you. Game 5 winners. Here's a stat for you. Game 5 winners have won the series 21 of 29 times.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that stat? Like, we see it every year. So, like, you mean to tell me that the team that gets 2 chances to win 1 game wins at a higher clip than the team that can no longer afford to lose? Really? That's very interesting, don't you think?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, of course, those teams are winning at a higher clip. Of course, when you're up 3-2, you get that much better of a chance to win the series. But yeah, I hear you. It's going to be hard for the Suns to come back and win game 6 after what happened the last 3 games.
Especially in Milwaukee, right? So game 6 will be in Milwaukee on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. And that crowd, like, you know, they kept on whenever, you know, toward in the fourth quarter, you know, they kept on going to that crowd outside the Bucks arena. It was ridiculous. I was saying to myself, you know, don't get me wrong, looks like a ton of fun. Not my kind of party, but man, yeah. I don't know if they gave a stat, like a number in regard to how many fans were out there outside the arena cheering.
It's been 50 years since they won the title with, you know, Kareem and Oscar in 71. So to be 48 minutes away from accomplishing that, you know, a lot of these fans are witnessing it for the first time. It's going to be the coronation of Giannis, who at 26 is on the cusp of a finals MVP, a title to go along with 2 regular season MVPs and defensive player of the year. He's already top 100 in playoff scoring. Like, that guy's incredible. What got lost, though, we haven't even mentioned this. The Suns were up 16 in the first quarter. 32-16. Yeah. I remember Breen saying, timeout Bucks, that the Suns have doubled up Milwaukee. That game should have been over in the first quarter. The first half, it should be done. Like, we should have already been previewing game six. You know, Monty Williams should have been able to rest his players in that fourth quarter. And for some reason, the Bucks, you know, let their foot off the gas pedal and allowed Milwaukee to get right back in it in the second quarter. The second quarter, they were already trailing after being up 16.
You know why? 62% shooting for the Bucks. 62%.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. They they were 32 of 45 in the second and third quarter. Marinating that.
Yeah, and the first quarter, I want to say the Suns were like 14 of 18 from the field, or 14 of 19 from the field. They led by 16, 37-21 at the end of the first quarter. I mean, the game should have been over. And then we get to halftime, the Bucks are winning. Can't have that happen. Game five of the NBA Finals on your home floor with Booker and CP3 in your backcourt, you can't have that happen.
It's just at the end of the day, and I said this yesterday, and this is why I was on the Bucks yesterday. By the way, only 10% of the public money was on the Bucks, so I was part of that 10%. I feel pretty good about that. I really felt, and it's been a roller coaster ride of how I've been feeling and playing the series, but what I saw in games three and four to me really showed me that the Bucks really have the number here. I call it the secret sauce in how to contest and compete with the Suns because of a few things. Like I said, got to give credit where credit's due in regard to Holiday's defense. Number two, Sarek tearing that ACL, not giving Ayton an opportunity to get some breathing time, because when Kaminsky and Craig are out there, Ayton's not there. Giannis is on the court, plus 21 for the Bucks. Ayton played 45 minutes, all 45 minutes yesterday, 20 points, 10 rebounds. He got a double-double, but that dude's got to be, let's be honest, that dude has to be spent right now. There's just no taking him off the court. You can't. Their hands are strapped right. They do not have the depth in the paint with the bigs. Booker, 42 points, great, but it's kind of like, if you recall, go back when Giannis was in the first two games. Giannis is putting up 40 points, but you know what? Middleton and Holiday, they're not contributing offensively, and so they're still, just because one guy's putting up 40, 42 points, that's not getting it done.
Yeah,
it's
a
team
thing,
sport.
Anita, with all of that you just outlined that had gone against the Suns in that game last night, they had a 16-point lead in the first quarter. And yes, we're now living in an era where those leads evaporate, you know, quicker than ever before because of the advent of three-point shooting. The Suns still had every opportunity to win that game yesterday and couldn't take advantage of it. Booker, you know, can't turn the ball over there. It's an excellent play by Drew Holiday. I think Holiday should get more credit for that than Booker should get blamed. But the Suns in games four and five, with the possession of the ball late in the game, had chances to win and just could not make the play. The Bucks are making all of the plays. They're getting all of the offensive rebounds. They're getting the stops. They're hitting the shots. By the way, how different would the conversation be today? Like, Giannis is going to get all the praise, and he should. He's been fantastic in this series. How different would the conversation be today if the Suns win that game after Giannis missed those two free throws? Think about
that's,
that.
That's no. You're absolutely right, because I'm sitting there and I'm watching. I'm like, I feel like I'm watching Shaquille O'Neal all over again, right? Like I understand you're a big man. I understand that you're and listen, I'm not comparing. I'm comparing apples and oranges here. I'm not sitting here comparing my basketball game to Giannis. But what I will tell you is,
I think it's comparable.
The point I'm making here is I have a hard time shooting a woman's ball. I do not play as well shooting with a woman's ball than I do with a men's ball. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the fact that I've grown up playing with a men's ball. I rarely played sports with women. I played sports with men. And so muscle memory, how it reacts. Have you tried to shoot baskets with a women's ball?
Oh, yeah.
How do you do?
I was an assistant coach for the women's basketball team.
Okay, so tough. I'm sure your shooting percentage is lower with a woman's ball than with a men's ball, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So follow me here. His hands are larger than the average bear. So I understand that it's difficult, but like this is your job.
Yeah, the best players in the league should be able to hit free throws. And
like, this is what you do for a living.
If they go on to lose that game, he's getting crushed today, tomorrow, and into game six on Tuesday, where it becomes the biggest game in his life, and he's got a ton of pressure. So Jrue Holiday, you know, single-handedly, you know, no pun intended, saved Giannis from what? We can say 72 hours of getting absolutely destroyed for missing those two free throws yesterday.
But
and
here's
credit
the thing,
to Giannis, he capitalized, he gets the alley-oop, he sealed the game with that dunk.
Yeah, but here's what the difference. We know this about Giannis. This isn't like, oh, the series started and all of a sudden Giannis is a horrible free throw shooter. No. Like, we know this. He's got this crazy, ridiculous, you know, routine where, you know, the refs can't give him, you know, and he's so demonstrative about it. He's like, you know, don't give me the ball yet, right? And then like, right? Like, don't give me the ball yet. I've got to do my deep breathing.
The breathing pattern correct. He's got to get his feet situated, the hands.
And I understand that if he does all that, he does all that show, all that rigmarole, whatever and then make it. he's doing all that dog and pony show, and then he's not making it.
Yeah. By the way, can we just acknowledge, like, the Suns fans just have to be a little bit smarter. Like, it's clever. It started with Brooklyn, I believe, doing the countdown, and then
right. The
Hawks did it, and now the Suns fans have adopted it. Wouldn't it make more sense, though, if you counted backwards, like down from 10, instead of going upward? Like, if you 10, 9, because now you're giving him, like, this shot clock expiration, and then it becomes funnier once you dip into the negative numbers, like -1, -2. That makes more sense than going upwards. I don't know. It's just something I thought about in game one when I was watching it.
I think you're onto something there, Ty. I think you're onto something. 800-919-3776. So your thoughts on Tuesday. The Bucks are back at home, and they are favored by 4. Full transparency, I've already laid the money. I think the Bucks sealed the deal. And you know what, Ty? I think it's a blowout. I think the Bucks win by like 10. I don't even think that Chris Paul and Devin Booker are going to be on the court the last 3 minutes of the game. How do you envision game 6 playing out?
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, let's bring in good friend of mine, good friend of our show. Always a pleasure having him on. That's David Sampson, former executive of the Marlins, and of course now part of he's come to the dark side. He's now a Major League Baseball analyst. He's got his own podcast. He does a ton of stuff, and he's fantastic. David, good morning. Hi.
Hey, Anita. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you doing? How are things down there in Miami?
Everything is good everywhere, at least for me. I must say, it's baseball season's happening. So many storylines, so much going on in the world. It's a good distraction right now. So much to cover today. Where do you even want to start?
I know. Well, let's start with the Yankees. And let's let's look back before we start. We go forward. You know, and that is, you know, this is a team that coming into the season, many people expected to win the World Series this year. You look at on paper, their lineup, their pitching rotation, they bring in Gerrit Cole, arguably best bullpen in Major League Baseball, and they have fallen way short. So give me that laundry list of all the things that you feel have gone wrong and how you assess why this team has fallen so short, David.
Well, before the season started on Nothing Personal, my show, I actually picked the Yankees to make it to the World Series and lose to the Braves. I'm not sure either one of those things is going to happen. But here's the problem. People thought that by signing Corey Kluber and Talon, that they had enough pitching. Severino would come back, and they had Gerrit Cole at the head of the rotation. And the assumption was that the offense of the Yankees would be the best in baseball. The back of the bullpen would break depth with Britton Cashman. And Chapman, all of that means that there were no holes, really. And I was quite concerned about their starting rotation, and that has certainly turned out to be true. They had some moments of greatness where they even set a record this year for a great run by the starters. I think they have the most shutout innings of any Yankee starting pitching ever. But I think that if you're going to pin it on one thing, you have to say the offense has just been horrid. The players have not played what we call to the back of their baseball card, which means that what we expected out of them going into the season, they've just fallen short. And it's not that, you know, Stanton has been injured. He had that one time on the injured list. He had that one streak in April and May where he was hot and carried the team. But other than that, he's been pretty cold, not normal Stanton. Concerns over Torres, even though we got that big home run last night. Obviously, Andujar Sanchez has outperformed. But as an offense, they don't score runs. And if you don't score runs, you're not going to win.
You know, they don't score runs. The philosophy obviously is, you know, no small ball, just, you know, pound the home runs, and they just haven't been there. Now compounded with, you've got Judge and Urshela out now because of the 10-day COVID situation that they're facing. And they've got a really difficult stretch. Another game later on tonight against Boston, two against Philly, and then they've got a head to Boston for a 4-game series. You know, looking at, if you were Cashman, I always say this to you, put on the Cashman hat. If you were Cashman, what are you thinking as we get closer to the trade deadline? Based on what you've seen from this team, this organization, this lineup, this rotation, these players, the landscape of Major League Baseball, are you going to be active and attractive? Are you going to be aggressive? Or are you going to be sellers as we get close to the end of this month?
So I think there's another possibility, which is just being neutral. So here's the two ways we used to look at the trade deadline. One, has the club done anything to merit helping them? So we'd say to the players, hey, listen, if you guys can just stay in the race, if you can perform, we're going to bring in reinforcements. And we're going to try to get another pitcher. We'll try to bring in another bat, whatever we think we need. But you guys have to show some sign of life. And the Yankees just haven't done that. I'm not sure they deserve to get any help. But then on top of that, Brian Cashman is working under financial constraints like the rest of us all of a sudden. His constraints are a little different because his payroll is so high. But Hal Steinbrenner is not going to go over the luxury tax threshold to add players, especially when they're looking up at the Blue Jays and the Rays and the Red Sox. And frankly, all three of those teams are better than the Yankees. So if I'm Cashman, I tell Steinbrenner, hey, I'm not even going to ask you to go over the luxury tax threshold, even though I know you'll say no. But I'm also going to go to that clubhouse and say, guys, I'm not sure if you've got till July 30th. You know, you've got 2 weeks. We need to win, you know, 10 out of the next 14 games, and then we'll reevaluate. But the way we're playing right now, the inconsistency, the lack of ability to sort of get any sort of sustained winning, the lack of the Red Sox falling back to earth, all of those things happening indicate that we are not going to do anything at the deadline.
You know, let's talk about Stanton for a second. You mentioned him, you know, obviously, you know, not vintage Stanton, you know, and I field a lot of calls from Yankee fans, and I've spoken to a lot of analysts, and really everybody says the same thing. Like he handcuffs this roster. He handcuffs this lineup because he can't play the outfield. They're too scared to put him in the outfield. He's going to get hurt. And so you've got him as a DH, and it's really, you know, it really throws things off. I mean, is that a guy that you think, if you were Cashman, would you kind of throw out there, hey, listen, I'll listen to offers for Stanton? Obviously, they would have to eat a good portion of his ridiculous contract. But what do you do with Stanton if you were the general manager, David?
Well, first of all, he's got a no trade clause. So in order for that to happen, you'd have to go to Stanton and ask whether he wanted to be traded. And he wanted to be a Yankee. He wants to be a Yankee. He wants to win with the Yankees. And I don't agree with the way you're characterizing it. And I know Giancarlo very well, obviously. Of course he would play the outfield. The Yankees are choosing not to play him in the outfield because they are under the impression that is what leads to some of his injuries. We never found that during all the years we had him with the Marlins. You know, there are freak injuries. They're, you know, obviously getting hit in the face. That's not under his control. It has a body that can be tight, which means you could have some hamstring issues, some leg issues. Things just happen when you have a body that size. You've seen it with Aaron Judge. But I don't view Stanton as the main problem at all. When you've got a payroll of 200, you can have a $30 million player. And Stanton can carry you for periods of time. I would bet you if you spoke to him and he were honest with you, and it's hard to be honest with people in the media, but he would say, hey, of course I'd rather play the outfield. I know him. He doesn't like sitting on the bench waiting to hit. He'd love to be involved every inning being out there, but the Yankees, for whatever reason, made the decision, and Stanton's not the type who's going to call the media or send out tweets or talk about how unhappy he is with the front office. He just doesn't do stuff like that.
Interesting. David Sampson joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So let's talk about analytics for a second, right? Because another a lot of calls that I feel here is Boone's got to go. Aaron's got to go. And I'm gonna share this as an example. You know, I worked for the Giants for several years, and probably the biggest question I have is, hey, what's Eli Manning really like? Because he's just even keel, right? Giants winning, stone face. Giants losing, stone face. Nobody really knows Eli Manning's personality because publicly, he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. So what I think fans see from Aaron Boone when he's in the clubhouse is similar to that. Like, no highs, no lows. He doesn't get fiery. He's not Billy Martin, all that stuff. And so they just immediately think, like, he's just humdrum. He's just going with the flow. Where that might not be the case, because I know that Eli Manning is one of the biggest pranksters. He's one of the biggest jokers that I met covering all of the years that I've covered the NFL. So the public perception of Eli Manning is very different than what I saw at the Giants facility. And I use that as an example. You know, there's so much criticism because of that and the lack of success from this team that a lot of people are calling for Boone to go. And I've had a number of analysts and beat reporters on to say that if they don't make it to the postseason, chances are Boone is out of here. What is your take on Aaron Boone, how he's managed this club, and the image that is out there right now that he's portraying to the public?
I think that when you're the manager of the Yankees, you know, obviously the most important team in Major League Baseball, if not all of sports, you understand the responsibility of being that manager. You also understand the day you are hired, you are simply on your way to being fired. That's just the reality of being a manager in or a coach in Major League Sports. And Aaron Boone, and we had him with the Marlins, I know him well, he is really, really good at being a leader. He is really calm, and you have to be. He grew up in a baseball family. He understands the highs and lows. He doesn't panic. Of course, he gets frustrated, but he's not going to show that because he's not going to show opponents' weakness. He's not going to let the media see, you know, what he's going through because he wants to keep it inside the clubhouse. There are moments as a manager when he has to get on the field and he has to show emotion and he has to back up his guys. But I can tell you that he's very frustrated, but he's got to play with the players who are given to him by management. And this team was put together by Cashman, not by Boone. It was put together by Steinbrenner and Cashman, not by Boone. So it is not his fault, but managers are the ones who are blamed because the owners aren't going to fire themselves. They're not going to fire the team president. You'd like to fire the GM before the manager before the GM. But remember, Cashman's on a walk year. This is the last year. So my view is, again, I talked about this on Nothing Personal. If the Yankees do not make the playoffs, I think Cashman and Boone both will not return because the pressure on Hal Steinbrenner will be too great. He's already said that he doesn't like midseason changes. He's already said it's not their fault, it's the players' fault. He's done all the things that you would say to your fan base to keep them calm and to give them hope that the rest of the season could turn around. But if they end up missing the playoffs, there is no way he comes back with the same manager in front office.
Interesting. Again, David Sampson joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. And with that being said, like I prefaced before talking about Boone, and I want to talk about analytics because – you know, analytics are so many teams are driven by analytics now, but every team is different. And so I'd love for you to kind of take us inside. You know, what do you think the percentage? I'm hearing that there's a large percentage. The decisions that are being made in regard to the lineup and when to pull a pitcher, when to not. There's a large percentage that the Yankees value and listen to analytics as opposed to the human element. And I know every team is different. If you can kind of share with us that philosophy within Major League Baseball and within teams and organizations, David.
The philosophy is that numbers eliminate emotion and numbers eliminate your eyes fooling yourselves. Numbers eliminate confirmation bias. They eliminate recency bias, which means that when you see a player go 3 for 4, or you see a pitcher throw 7 innings, and you can go deeper and look into that and say, hey, that was because of luck. That was because certain balls were hit in certain places. you can look at a batter who's hitting 300 over the course of 20 games, but you can look to see what makes up that 300 average and how the majority of those balls should not have been hits, but they were, simply by chance and by incorrect defensive positioning, as an example. So what the reason teams use these numbers is that, and analytics so much, is they believe that human beings in general are going to make mistakes because of outside influences. I happen to love analytics, but I love the human element. I love using everything available to me to make decisions about players, about positioning, about batting order, et cetera. But you are right. The Yankees do rely heavily on analytics, and I get it. And many, many teams do, because numbers never lie. However, you have to keep in mind, someone like Aaron Boone, who is able to use analytics, he's very, very smart. He also is from, 75 years of a baseball family. So if I had a manager like Boone, like I had Don Mattingly, when we would go to Mattingly and say, here's the following thoughts we have, and here's what the numbers are saying, he would say, yes, I agree, but did you consider the following four things? And some teams don't want to hear what the manager considers. Some teams do. And the Yankees are an example of a team that they'll listen to Boone when he says something. But at the end of the day, the decisions are made by the analytics department.
Interesting. Last one for you. You know, let's say, hypothetically speaking, the Yankees don't make it to the postseason. You're saying that Cashman and Boone more than likely will be gone. Cashman, 5 rings, 24 seasons that he's finished above 500. In a New York second, he'll be picked up somewhere else, no doubt, right?
Yeah, if he wants to, of course, he's earned the right to have another job. And if I'm Brian Cashman, I've got a little Theo in me, where Theo went from the Red Sox having won a World Series, he went to the Cubs and won a World Series. I think Cashman is a Hall of Fame executive, but, there's ego involved, and he would love, I think, to go to an organization and show that he can have a World Series champion with more than one team. All runs come to an end, Anita. I had 18 great years in baseball, but it came to an end. Cashman's had 24 years, the best 24-year stretch of any GM, to me, any GM in sports with any team. The fact that he's been able to be with the Yankees for so long, I just think at some point you've got to make a change, and this would be the time.
David, always great to have you on. I so appreciate you. It's such a wealth of knowledge and blessed for your time. Why don't you let the listeners out there know exactly where they can find you, where to find your podcast, what you're doing right now?
So you can follow me on Twitter at David P. Sampson. We definitely have fun. But every day for 45 minutes, I do a show called Nothing Personal. Wherever you find your podcast, it's also on YouTube, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Please subscribe and follow and just enjoy. We talk sports, culture, politics, entertainment, review movies, make picks, talk about what's trending and what interests me, and we help people understand the issues, understand what's going on behind the scenes so they can see behind the curtain.
Love it, and love you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday fun day.
Oh, thank you. Be good. Thanks, Anita.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7. ESPN.
Without further ado, I think one of the best in the business, ESPN is so lucky to have him, and that's Bill Barnwell, joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Bill, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, Nina. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. The sun's coming out, which means I'm going to get my golf game in today. So I'm a happy camper. Let's pick it up right there, right? Aaron Rodgers, not happy with the organization. We saw him play in the match. It was all like, fun and games and laughs in regard to, them asking him questions. What are you hearing? What do you know? What's the likeliness that he's going to be starting quarterback for the Packers game one of the regular season?
I think it's pretty high, and I'll tell you why. I feel like we've all been around this person before, where maybe it's about complaining about a job or a significant other or something in their life. And when they have the opportunity to really push for it, they might complain all day. When they have the opportunity to really push the people who are on the other side of that problem into making a change, they don't do it. They don't break up with that person. They don't quit that job. Aaron Rodgers, to me, is obviously frustrated with the organization, and he should be. He lived through the other side of this, lived with Brett Favre being kind of a nuisance at the beginning of his career. Now he's doing the same thing with Jordan Love. But Aaron Rodgers' best chance of winning a Super Bowl is with the Green Bay Packers. This is the team that's gone to the NFC Championship game in back-to-back years, 13-3 both years, a team that is extremely well-positioned to compete for a Super Bowl again in 2021. And as much as I would like to see him join the Broncos, and I would as well, I think that'd be a really fascinating team, a team I think would have a viable shot at making it to the Super Bowl in the AFC. They're on a division with the Kansas City Chiefs. That is a scary, scary football team. And with the Packers, I mean, it's the Bears, it's the Vikings, it's the Lions. They're ahead of the pack, not to make a pun, but they're ahead of the group there, clearly, in the NFC North. So to me, I think Aaron Rodgers wants to let it be known he's upset, but I think realistically, there's at least one more year where Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
Interesting. I just, you know, I'm someone, Bill, I know we haven't known each other very long. I need zen. Like I don't like drama in my personal life. I don't like drama at work. And there's obviously, and you've been in the walls of an organization. These dudes are there, especially quarterbacks, are there 7 days a week for like 16 hours a day. You know, you're walking around and what do you do? Avoiding a certain, you're avoiding that side of the facility because you don't want to run into the general manager who you hate so much. It's just, I don't know. But I understand what you're saying. I believe you. A number of people believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to be back. I have a little bit of hope. I'd love to see him go to Denver. I just love Denver this year. That's for sure. Let's move on to the Falcons. Now, Julio Jones, one of the biggest trade acquisition. I can't even get the word out. He goes to the Tennessee Titans. Now, a lot of people are fading the Falcons because of that. Listen, when was the last time that Julio has been able to stay healthy for an entire season? Not to take anything away from him, you can argue top five wide receiver in the NFL, but I don't, and I know it's the Falcons are a very competitive division. Don't sleep on the Saints just because they don't have Drew Brees. Everybody's expecting the Bucs to run it back and win the Super Bowl. Love that what's going on with Carolina in that. And why am I drawing a blank now? Is over there now as the quarterback who used to be here with the Jets. Why am I drawing? There you go. Sam Darnold. Thank you, Ty. What would I do without you this morning? So I think it's going to be a competitive division, but I think a lot of people are really riding off the Falcons because of no Julio Jones. What say you?
I'm pretty optimistic about the Falcons. My only concern is that they only have 7 home games this year. AFC teams have 9 home games. NFC teams have 8 typically, but the Falcons are the one NFC team that has a home game in London this year. So they're down to 7 home games. My only concern with them, but I agree with you 100%. Julio Jones, a great player. I'm not going to suggest that the Falcons aren't going to be worse on offense without Julio Jones. Of course it's the case. But this is a guy who, even when he's healthy, misses about 20% of the snaps typically per game. And then on top of that, missed half the season last year. It was around for a half season where the Falcons, frankly, were not playing very well. They were better last year, at least, really, without Julio Jones in the fold. But a team that was incredibly unlucky last year when it came to closing out games. This is a team that I wrote about it this week. A team that lost 2 games last year where they had a win expectancy of 99%. 4 games last year with a win expectancy of 90%. I believe 6 with a win expectancy of 80% or more. And I know you're going to, not you, but I know people are going to tie that back to the Super Bowl. Not only is it not really the same team in terms of the players in some cases, but they have not been a team over the course of the last few years outside of the Super Bowl and outside of last year where they were blowing leads late in games. So I really think that the Falcons are a team that, people are going to look at that record. They're going to look at losing Julio Jones and be skeptical. I think their underlying performance, and I think the overall roster, the broader roster they have, makes me more optimistic. I don't know if they get to the playoffs, but to me, I think they're at least a 7-8 win team.
Let's move on to the division that the Giants are in, the NFC East. I love Washington. I think Washington's going to win the division. I think it's going to come down between the Giants and the Dallas Cowboys competing to see maybe which of those two teams could at least hopefully win 10 games and maybe get in as a wild card. I have no expectations for the Eagles. But you think the Eagles' offense is going to be better than what most people anticipate. Why?
It's the offensive line. I mean, that team, that organization, they really build around the line of scrimmage. They're going to invest a ton of money up front on the defensive line, and they're going to invest a lot of draft assets and financial capital, a lot of money, a lot of their cap space on the offensive line. And last year, I mean, that was a horror show in terms of injuries. Jason Kelce, excellent center, played the whole year, but I mean, the guys they were going to start at all four other spots, all of them expected to be either above average or superstar players at their respective positions, none of them are healthy. Andre Dillard missed the entire season, starting left tackle. Brandon Brooks, excellent guard, missed the entire year. Lane Johnson pretty much hobbled through a few games. They said at the end of the year when he had surgery, his ankle had disintegrated, which is bad. I'm not a doctor, but disintegrated ankle is not something you want to play on at the NFL level. And then Isaac Seumalo missed half the season at left guard. Jason Peters, the future Hall of Famer, to be the guy they brought in to replace Dillard last two games and got hurt. And, when you're playing behind four backups up front, we saw in the Super Bowl, you could be Patrick Mahomes. Your offense isn't going to work. And I don't know if Jalen Hurts is an NFL caliber quarterback. He might just be, might not be up to that level. But playing behind four backups, you're not going to learn a lot about any quarterback. All you're going to learn is how quickly they can run for their lives away from the opposing pass rush. So to me, I think the Eagles have more of an offensive infrastructure than people are giving them credit for. We'll see what happens with Zach Ertz. We'll see what happens with the receiving core. But I do think they're live. I don't think they're better than Washington. I think you're right to be optimistic about Washington. But I think they're more live in that division than maybe people are giving them credit for.
Last one for you before we let you go, and that's the Texans and what's going on with their quarterback situation with Deshaun Watson. We really haven't heard much in regard to the NFL investigation, what's going on in the courts. What can folks anticipate with the Texans and Deshaun Watson as we get closer to training camp opening up?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like the NFL is trying to, just bury this as deep as possible, whether they are encouraging Watson to settle, whether they're hoping that the court system kind of throws it out. I mean, the NFL certainly does not want to have to deal with this issue, and the Texans don't want to have to deal with this issue. The best thing for the Texans, obviously, Deshaun Watson, getting past this case, coming back to play quarterback, or getting past this case and holding significant trade value. Certainly, the Texans want one of those two scenarios, and obviously, the charges are serious and need to be taken seriously. With the Texans on the whole, I mean, it really feels like just an organization that is such. They're just on hold right now as an entire organization. I mean, they signed 30 players this year on really all 1 or 2 year deals just to really field a competent football team that have veterans who have at least had some experience in different roles. Of course, their quarterback situation, Tyrod Taylor is going to be their quarterback in the future, or quarterback of the present. There's no real quarterback in the future there if Watson's not the guy. Davis Mills, their third rounder, maybe could be a guy, but third round picks, the success rate is not super high for quarterbacks there. The weapons, I'm going to do weapons rankings this week for ESPN. They're the worst weapons in football, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. I think I'm a little optimistic about the defense improving, but I don't know, Anita. I mean, if you had to pick, is there anyone else in the same ballpark when it comes to having odds for the worst team in the NFL? Maybe the Lions, but...
The Lions, for sure. Right. And I'll tell you why really quick before I let you go, because I talked about the Lions on Daily Wager this week, and that is I like what they're doing. They're focusing in on the trenches, on both the offensive line and the defensive line, and then I believe that they are going – I hate to use the word tank, but pretty much. I mean, Goff was a salary dump, okay? Wasn't like, I know they're saying good things about Goff, but let's be honest. Galladay's not there. Marvin Jones Jr. isn't there. I think they arguably could have the worst record in the NFL, but they're focusing on they want to get the offensive line and the defensive line straight before they go out and get their quarterback, who, as we know, that's how you win. You win on a quarterback's rookie deal. So they want to get the parts around him ready to go before they go out and get their quarterback, who I think that they will do this coming draft. So I'll be honest with you, Bill. I kind of like that philosophy, and I don't have a problem with the Lions tanking this year, trying to get those important parts, offensive and defensive line, intact before they go out and they get their quarterback of the future.
I agree. And I think the Lions have a plan. The Texans, not so
There's
much.
No plan. Bill, you rock. Always appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday fun day.
Thanks, Anita.
This is Click, 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 or Don't. Click, Click, Boom. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
That's right. It's Click or Don't Click. Ty Butler producing the show and typically leads the way for us in this segment, looking around our landscape of our sports society, looking at the headlines and finding out what is trending at 11:13 a.m. on this Sunday. Ty, what you got?
They finally got it done, Anita. Who, you may ask?
I'm clicking that. Right, I want to know. I want to know who got it done.
The New York Yankees, who for the first time in eight tries, finally defeated the hated rival Boston Red Sox. Aaron Boone on the importance and significance of winning that game last night.
Yeah, I mean, every day is so important right now for us as a team. And certainly tonight was the case. You know, obviously Garrett was terrific. You know, we came through with some big hits. DJ with a huge at bat there to tie the game, and then a couple of home runs was good to see. Did some really good things defensively. So to finally, you know, push through against those guys is certainly nice. You know, now we got a big one tomorrow.
Speaking of Garrett Cole, he was fantastic last night. Six innings, five hits, one earned run, 11 strikeouts. Got into some trouble in the first inning. Allowed a leadoff double, but it was able to escape that jam. This was a shortened affair because of the rain. Garrett Cole, 10-4 in the season. What was very interesting last night, because Kyle Higashioka is on the COVID protocol list, Garrett Cole now had to pitch to Gary Sanchez. Higashioka is his personal catcher. Garrett Cole was asked about working with Gary Sanchez.
I thought we worked well.
Yeah, very articulate there. That's the entire cut. That was not edited. That's the entire answer.
I thought we worked well.
Aaron Boone on Cole and Sanchez working together.
I thought they were great. Seamless. I thought it went really well.
Yeah, so.
Is that somebody texting Booney while he's, is that what that ding is?
I don't know. Maybe someone's texting you.
No, nobody's texting me. My phone vibrates. In fact, several times I do have people. I have friends who are listening to the show who text me and say, "Hey, listen, you know, shut your vibrating phone off because we hear it through the microphone."
Maybe that
was. Aren't you hearing that ding? I feel like every time you play a Booney sound bite, it's bing. We hear that ding.
Maybe that's Cashman texting him. Yeah, you better have gotten this one.
I know.
Fired you.
I was gonna be like
after the game. But the Yankees beat the Red Sox 3-1. He's working.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's working. Leave him alone.
But not much has changed. You look at the standings, and the Yankees still a long way to go in the division. They're 8 games back of Boston, and in the wild card standings, the Yankees right now are 4.5 back of the A's, who sit at number 2, 6.5 back of the Rays, who sit at number 1. So it's still a tall task. Last night didn't really do much for me. You alluded to this in the open of the show. It's great to see Cole, after struggling since that memo was sent out on June 3rd. You look at his numbers. He was not great. The memo I'm talking about with the sticky stuff. He was not great since baseball banned that substance. But now that's back-to-back gems. He had the complete game against the Astros last Saturday where he was fantastic. I believe he threw about 127 pitches. He finished that one out. And then last night against the Red Sox, he comes through and pitches 6 innings and helps the Yankees get their first win against Boston. So you got to love what you see from that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You got to like it. But do you love it? How confident are you that the Yankees would have won if they had to go into the bullpen?
We don't got to talk about that. You get the victory where it comes from. And look, yes.
All right. So let me ask you, what are your expectations for tonight?
Not much. Not much. It just, like with the Yankees, anytime you're ready. Now it's one game. How do you have any type of momentum following one game? But anytime you're ready to start believing that this team can put something together, it just falls apart. They got Taillon on the mound tonight. He hasn't been great this season against Perez for the Red Sox, Sunday Night Baseball. So it'll be a fun nationally televised game if you're sitting at home. But for the Yankees, look at the lineup they're putting out there. their two best players, or two of their best players, I should say, in Urshela and Judge are on the COVID protocol list. They're without Andujar, without Frazier, you know. So it's tough. Voight's now on the IL. When you're missing five of your impact players on offense, it's tough for them to score runs. It's tough for them to score runs when these guys are healthy and in the lineup. So not much to be expected from this team tonight. It was a great win. Shout out to Gerrit Cole. He's been great. But I don't anticipate them winning this game tonight against the Red Sox, who have been really, really good this year.
I don't either. And I just, here's the thing, though. I feel like I've been a negative Nelly this entire show.
You have.
And you know me, I'm not. And you know me, I'm
You're
not.
You're just a very I'm negative not. Person.
I'm just, I feel like I have been a very negative person for the last 3 hours in 20 minutes. And I apologize for that. That's not normally me.
There was another baseball team locally that played last night. The New York Mets suffering a devastating, devastating loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates. It was a game. They had multiple leads that they blew. And actually, before we even get to the game, we found out prior to first pitch about some tough injury news. And it was that Francisco Lindor, who had suffered an oblique strain, was going to miss some time. Here is him discussing the injury.
This is the first time that something like this happens in my career. I don't have any timetable out to guess. I would love to say I'm day to day, but I'm not. This is more like maybe week to week at the beginning, and then see how I bounce back. God is in control. He's going to dictate how long I'm going to be out for. I'm going to work as hard as I can to try to be back for sure.
So an offense that has already struggled this season, losing one of its best players. Now, Lindor hasn't been great, but you don't lose one of your best players and don't feel the impact. Another injury, Luis Rojas reporting on the DeGrom arm soreness that's going to take him out of his next start.
So, and it's good that you asked that so I can reveal this. So, yeah, Walker's going tomorrow for us, and we were TBA. We're waiting on Jake to throw his side yesterday. As you guys know, he got in pregame right here to the field, and they did all the intake process that we needed to do with all the guys according to protocol. And but when he was throwing his side, he felt some tightness in his forearm, and he didn't finish his side. So we're evaluating him. He has been getting treatment, so we'll see where he's at. But right now he's you know, not pitching Monday either. So we're approaching him day to day at this time. But yeah, that's something he told me that he felt it when this is, he told me this today, by the way, I didn't know about this. He told me that he felt it on a side that he threw before the break. He played catch at home and intended to throw a side there too. And he felt the tightness again, and he just stopped throwing. And he felt that a couple of days off and coming here, throwing a side Friday, he was going to be away because it's a similar feel that he has in between starts sometimes with forearm tightness, but goes away. But this time hasn't gone away. And that's why right now he's just getting treatment.
Now, that was the, I guess, how do I say this? That prefaced what was a collapse, an embarrassing collapse for the Mets yesterday. They were up 6-0 on a woeful Pirates team and found a way to lose that game as Edwin Diaz surrendered a walk-off grand slam in Pittsburgh. The Pirates are 20 games under 500. The Mets, first place in this division, not a team you should be losing to. They've been struggling with the Pirates. So to watch that unfold yesterday after the tough injury news, it's a rough day for the Mets. Here was Edwin Diaz. He actually pointed upward. Like when the ball left the bat on that grand slam, he pointed upward. I guess he thought it was going to be caught.
I couldn't believe it when he cleared the fence. I thought it was a fly ball. So the ball kept carrying on, you know, he got the homer.
Thought it was a fly ball. No, it was a fly ball, but it left the park as Stallings hits that grand slam. Pirates get past the Mets 9-7. So injuries, another loss, not great news for the New York Mets.
No, you know, and we fielded a few calls yesterday on the show about DeGrom and Mets fans concerned, you know, as we know, did not participate in the All-Star game. Okay, neither here nor there, but you know, load management on him. Listen, they're expected to get Noah Syndergaard back soon. As we get closer to the trade deadline, you know, I know that they're going to need some help in regard to the lineup. I do anticipate them. I don't know, maybe Chris Bryan is a guy that they're going to go after with the Cubs. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe they get somebody else to help bolster this rotation if they so feel that they need it. I'm excited to see what Noah's going to do when he gets back. But I want to say the last time I checked, Ty, the FPI probability of the Mets making it to the postseason is pretty high, like somewhere like mid, if not high, 80%. And so I don't have a problem with them being really careful with DeGrom, because if the Mets have any opportunity, any chance to win a World Series, it's going to be because of DeGrom. So if you've got load management, you need to take it slow with him. You need to be careful with him right now. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. And I found this pretty interesting. Dan Grosser, one of the biggest Met fans I know, talent here at the station, host of Jets pre and post game. He tweeted out yesterday, might as well shut DeGrom down and have him 100% for next season. This team is going nowhere. And you say, well, that's odd to say for a team that's currently
going
in first.
Nowhere.
I was going to say, someone would read that and say it's odd considering they're in first place. But he points out, you know, this last place team that you've lost to, you know, you blew a 5-0 lead, a 6-0 lead. It's happened twice in the span of 3 games. You're the lowest scoring team in the league. The Mets have all these issues. Yes, they're in first place, but it feels a little fraudulent. It does feel a little fraudulent. And now with DeGrom, he's been incredible this year, but he keeps getting hurt. And you wonder about, you know, the future. And not that you would ever punt on an opportunity to win a championship, because particularly in baseball, with the way this rotation is performed, you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. But there has to be some concern if you're the Mets and if you're rooting for this team.
Listen, I understand you know their record. What are they, 19 and 17 against their division opponents? Batting wise, they're not batting well, but we've seen it time and time again, Ty. How you win World Series, how you win championships is your pitching rotation. And again, I'm excited. Apparently they're getting Noah Syndergaard back the beginning of September.
But what's the expectation for him after, you know, missing that much time?
I don't know. That's why I'm excited to see what he can do. I mean, we don't know, but you know, their pitching rotation with you know, Walker and Stroman is solid.
Yeah, it's great. Like, the rotation's not a problem. The team needs to hit.
But Alonso, again,
and McNeil and Lindor, Conforto, like this is a lineup that features some talented offensive players. Y'all should be able to be better than the last place offensive team in the league, or the worst offensive team in the league. You should be better than that.
I understand all of that. I'm just saying they are in a better situation than most when it comes to trying to improve this roster as they get close to the trade deadline, going after guys that are going to help bolster their lineup, because their pitching they've already got, and pitching wins championships. That's my point.
Gotcha.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just so Dan Gross's tweet social media post is a little surprising to me.
And we do have to end off with the finals. Game 5 last night, the Bucks stealing one in Phoenix. And you can say, well, they were up 10 with 3 minutes to go. How is that stealing? Well, they were down 16 at the end of the first quarter on the road against a desperate Phoenix team that, by the way, I came across this stat. In the playoffs, anytime the Suns, I just want to make sure I got this right. That's because the Suns had a double-digit lead. So in the playoffs, the Suns had a 13-0 record when up by double digits at any point in the game. They were 13-0. So essentially, they get a double-digit lead, you're not beating them. That the game is over. They're up 16 to end the first quarter, and still find a way to lose that game, thanks to the brilliance of the big three in Milwaukee, with Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday all having special nights, different parts of the game being affected. But this exchange I found really interesting. I don't know if you got a chance to hear this, but But here was the question. So Devin Booker and CP3, after a horrifying loss, the worst loss of their career, obviously, given the circumstances, they're sitting up there at the podium. Here was a question posed to Devin Booker.
Obviously a really tough loss. Devin, how frustrated are you for Chris right now?
Next question, please.
Let's just hear that one more time.
Obviously a really tough loss. Devin, how frustrated are you for Chris right now?
Next question, please.
How frustrated are you for Chris Paul right now? Devin Booker, who in game four scored 40, who last night scored 40, who is playing the best basketball of his career, essentially two wins away from a championship. Just a horrifying loss last night. He turned the ball over. It was a critical moment in the game. Could probably lose them the series. And the question to Devin Booker is...
Obviously a really tough loss. Devin, how frustrated are you for Chris right now?
Wow.
Next question, please.
How frustrated are you for Chris?
Here's the thing. He said four. He didn't say in.
No, but...
How frustrated are you for Chris right now as opposed to how frustrated are you in Chris right now?
No. But the question is being posed as if Devin Booker is like Chris Paul's best friend who doesn't play on the team. Like he's his high school best friend. You're watching Chris Paul go through this series, about to lose in the finals. How frustrated are you for him? I'm playing in this series too. Like I'm the best player on this team. We just lost a heartbreaker. And your question to me is about how frustrated I am for Chris Paul? That doesn't make any sense. No sense whatsoever.
Awkward.
Awkward to say the least. That's a tough one, Anita. I don't know how you get up from that. You up 2-0 in the series. You get blown out in game three. You lose a crusher in game four. And then to have that unfold the way it did last night, three straight losses, the last of which comes on your home floor. Now you got to go back to Milwaukee with that home crowd, with Giannis playing the way that he has been in this series. Middleton's been great. Drew Holiday, all of a sudden, we talked about him yesterday. He couldn't score. He did it on both ends last night. He had 30 points and played shutdown defense and then had the two biggest plays in the game on one sequence where he steals the ball from Devin Booker and then throws the alley to Giannis that seals the game. I don't know how you get up from that if you're Phoenix.
I don't think you do. And like I said, Bucks are favored by four. That line came out last night and I jumped all over it because I think that line's going to go up.